Welcome back to the Here Together podcast from the Philadelphia Orchestra. I'm Tori Marchioni, and this is a space to hear from artists and activists working hard to improve our world. Before we dive in, just a heads up that there are a couple intrusive sounds from our beautiful city on this episode. Unfortunately, in COVID times, these things can't always be avoided. Hopefully it's not too distracting, because you'll want to hear every word our guest has to say. Today, we're joined by Janine A. Cook, the author, organizer, and entrepreneur behind Harriet's Bookshop in Fishtown, Philadelphia. It's a beautiful, welcoming space that a few Philadelphia Orchestra members were lucky enough to experience for themselves just a few weeks ago, when they dropped by to play a few tunes as part of the Our City, Your Orchestra series. Excerpts from that program will be sprinkled throughout this episode, and you'll be able to find titles and links listed in the description section. Now, back to our guest. It's a little funny to think that when Janine Cook first opened the doors at Harriet's back in February, she expected it to be a quiet sanctuary and writing studio. Little about this year has turned out to be quiet. In March, Janine was forced to close up shop, sell digitally. In May, she published a compilation of short stories called Conversations with Harriet. In June, Janine armed protesters with free books about leaders like Malcolm X. By the end of July, the bookshop's following exploded, gaining more than 30,000 Instagram followers overnight. In August, Janine and some friends from the custom furniture company, Bev Unlimited, were hatching a plan to bring her bookshop to the sidewalk. Then, in September, Janine and several other Black business owners in the area received a slew of racist, violent, threat-laden emails. But she didn't cower, nor did she call the cops. Instead, in October, Janine co-organized a modern-day sit-in, inviting community together to share music, poetry, and strategy, exploring how to protect and serve one another. A good idea anytime, but perhaps especially during an age when it's so easy to feel isolated.
Community is, it might not be what you want, but it's what you need. And especially right now, right? And one of the things that we've, you know, I put out something today and it says, it talks about leaning in and leaning, you know, leaning on and allowing somebody to lean on you. And that's what community does. And especially when you hear reports that lives like yours don't seem to matter. And when you hear that, you know, there are people who are dying and being murdered for completely no reason and nothing is being done about it. In those moments, we need each other more than ever before so we can start planning and strategizing how to move forward.
You're also working on a pamphlet now, too, right? What's the plan with that?
So I have this thought of, it sounds a little off. It's similar to what I imagine Thomas Paine must have been doing, but it's just like some things, like I call it more conversations with Harriet, some things that I think people need to be thinking about as we move closer and closer to times that feel uncertain and or more uncertain than even the times that we live in now. And some things that I think that people might want to be prepared for and be thinking about. One thing I recognize is that sometimes we feel a lot of pity for people who were enslaved and don't recognize some of the strengths that they had that we don't. And so one of those things is just like, for instance, one section is about knowing the land and really getting to a place where we understand what the, you know, we understand the landscape of where we live. And if we have to navigate it by foot at some point, we can. And if we have to navigate without the internet and without GPS, we can, and that we know what the trees are that are around us and that we know what the plants are that are growing around us. And we know the waterways and that we begin to understand how to use the stars to navigate in the ways that our folks used to once upon a time. And so those are just an example of one of the sections. Yeah, so it's in the works. I have to get it done.
Well, I can't wait to read it. And I actually want to ask you about another thing you've written, which is your email signature. It's everything is unfolding in perfect order. And as we were setting this interview up, I was really taken aback in a good way by seeing that in a business context. And I enjoyed observing how it changed the interaction for me. Where did that mantra come from?
So it's funny because it's something my sister once said to me that has stuck with me for a long time. And once when I was working for a company, I used to use it in my signature, like, because it's been my signature for years. And the lady from the company was like, I need you to remove that from your signature. And I was just like, what? Why? And she was just like, it's confusing to people. And I said, confusing in what way? Right. And like, this is classic Janine, is like to ask a question always. I have a million questions, especially when people confront me with things that I perceive as not making sense or being rooted in something way deeper than they're trying to make it about. And so confusing in what way? Oh, well, I thought that you were trying to start a conversation with that signature. And I was like, well, then let's have the conversation. Oh, well, I don't know if people will understand that. Well, no one else has had any problems with it. You know, it speaks volumes in very few words. And especially in times where things don't feel like they're unfolding in perfect order. You know, we've all been witness to moments where something seemingly problematic has happened, and only for us to reflect later on and say, yep, that's exactly how that needed to happen for me to get to this point right here. You know, and just to jump right in, there were years ago, I thought I was going to have a store up further on Girard. And what ended up happening was that store caught fire. And again, that's a perfect example of when a mantra like this comes completely in handy, because it's like, okay, take a breath. This is not how I intended this to go. This doesn't make any sense to me. And it feels like there must be something wrong. And then we tend to go straight to, was something wrong with me? Is this something that I did? And it's like, well, maybe it's a lot bigger than you. And maybe you belong on the east side of Girard in Fishtown. And maybe that'll be where you actually do way better. And maybe you need 3 more years to cultivate this idea. And maybe, and so all of those things come into play when it comes to that particular mantra for me, yes.
Hearing about the first location burning down, like if someone was going to write a book with a character who had to have a lot of heart and really get over something, we would burn her store down. That would be the obstacle to see if that could knock her out of the game. And
I mean, and then after they burned your store down, what they would do when you opened your new store is 6 weeks later, they'd say, there's this virus that has taken over the entire world. And you now need to shut down 6 weeks later. And that character would then have to figure out ways to overcome yet another, unfortunate circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but both of your parents were in ministry, right?
They both were. Yep, they both were. And they both were also handicapped. My mother went blind when I was about 11. And my father was diagnosed with terminal kidney failure that same year. It happened all like at the same time. But yeah, they both were in ministry. And, you know, I tell people all the time, I come from a long line of preachers and teachers. And so, yes, my father, but then my father's mother, I think, is probably the best speaker that I've ever witnessed. With no formal education, but just someone who knows how to connect with people through words.
Wow. And I know at one point you said like you were not trying to be in ministry at all.
No.
But
definitely not.
Vocational though. Like the way that between your activism and your artistic practice and the way that you blend those, that sounds so vocational.
Yeah. You know, I think, and that wasn't that I've been a teacher since I came to Philly. I started this thing called Positive Minds, where we would go out and teach kids how to use cameras and how to tell stories directly on their blocks. And to me, that work was just so amazing. And it required that I get to know people and that I learn how to connect quickly. It required that we understood community. A lot of those are skills that I did definitely learn in the church, right? It required that we think about being connected. And I never thought that Janine would be, you know, I thought this was going to be a very quiet bookstore that nobody was going to ever come to, that I was going to sit in here and write all day, and that was going to be my experience. And I think had I known that it was going to do what it's done, I probably would have been too afraid to move forward.
I always feel like the people who are sort of reluctant leaders are the best ones, when there's no ego reach for, like, I'm going to have 30,000 followers. It's that, like,
oh, hell no. I'm shy. And I keep telling people that, and they're like, oh yeah, right. And I'm like, no, I'm shy. I am quiet and I am shy. And people are like, no, there's no way. And I'm just like, I mean, I'm doing this because this is what needs to be done and what I, in many ways, feel called to do. And feel like, you know, there is a void that has been in the society of somebody who's given some sort of, like, clarity to some of the things that we see happening. And I'm just using books. All I'm pulling from is books that we all have access to. It's not like I'm, like, you know, in some, that's all I'm using is the same books that I'm selling and hoping for people to purchase, and sometimes giving away for completely free, so that people can have the access to the information.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to your point, there's so much wisdom in books that we just forget to open.
Yeah, and that's not a coincidence. I don't think that's an accident. I think that there's an onslaught on our attention spans, right, that makes it difficult for us to read the way that we know that we would like to, right? But I can talk to Harriet Tubman by picking up that book. I can talk to, you know, I keep talking about Thomas Paine. I can talk to Thomas Paine. People are like, Janine, you're talking about Thomas Paine and you got the Black Woman Bookshop. And I'm like, yeah, but he had those pamphlets and he was out on the street. And to me, that's just so powerful. I cannot wait to finish my little pamphlet book so I can get it out on the street too. He inspires me. And I can talk to him through his books, you know, and I can talk to Malcolm or whoever else I want to talk to. We can talk to them through these books. And then at the same time, we can also talk to, at least in my mind, we can talk to the future in some ways when we make a decision to write down what it is that we're experiencing now, what we hope to see soon, what things we want to put into place for them, what the dreams and desires we have for them. You know, just imagine your grandchildren finding your journals. Imagine them finding your diaries. Like, how powerful of an experience that will be, how impactful that will be for them. And I'm encouraging you, Tori, and everybody, anybody, like, leave something for them, because they will need it.
It seems like you have this really acute awareness of yourself as being one point on a very long continuum, that you have this real sense of responsibility to a legacy that is bigger than you. Where did you learn that, and sort of how do you think about your own life in the larger context?
My great, great, great grandchildren mean a whole lot to me. And I am the great-great-granddaughter of someone who I have no idea who they were. To be in connection with my lineage in both directions gives me so many tools and so much strategy and so many opportunities. I think that, you know, I was talking to the interns today and I was like, you know, there are things that have to stop now. We cannot let your grandchildren be thinking about the police running up in their house and killing them in their sleep and there being no accountability for that. That cannot continue. I am sorry that you're even experiencing it in your lifetime, but no more, right? Because when I read about Harriet, when I read about her, these are the same conversations that she was having with herself then in the 1800s that we're having with ourselves now in 2020. Like that's wrong. It's wrong. And what does it mean? It means that there is a huge responsibility for us to do some things now that make a preparation for later. And that's what strategy does. You say, okay, what is our strategy? What do we want? Because that's what I ask people. What do you want? Right. I hear a lot of people tell me, I don't want this. And I don't want that. And I don't want this. And I don't want that in my society. What do you want? Oh, crickets. OK, so once we know what we do want. Right. Oh, I want a bookstore. OK, you want a bookstore. Now you have a desire. Now you have a thing. What are the steps that it's going to take for you to get to that? That's homework. Now it's homework time. So go sit down, do that homework until you got some steps in place. And then come back, because you probably need some support. If we plan on actually doing something about the situation that our children and that we are dealing with right now, we have to get really clear about what it is that we want. We have to start seeing that in our mind's eye. And I apologize in advance to the people, because it's hard. It's not easy work to do, right? It's not easy work to say, I'm in this moment and I also need to think about the future and I also need to think about the past. But that's what has to happen. It has to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So right now you're working on your MFA at Drexel. The bookstore is thriving. Everything seems to be coming together pretty naturally. Did you always know that your art and activism would be good partners?
Good question. Yeah, you know, some years ago I was dating a guy and he told me two things that ended up being completely untrue. Probably many other things that I don't know about yet. But one of the things he told me was that I wasn't a writer. He was like, "You're not a writer." I was like, "Oh, but I really love writing, and I have this story and that story, and I got published once." And he was like, "Nah, you're not really serious about it. You're not a writer." Okay. And then the other thing he told me was that I was attempting to do too many things at once. He was like, you're always trying. That's why you're not getting things done, because you're trying to do too much at once. And, you know, no diss to him. You know, I think he was coming from the place that he was coming from at the time that he was coming from that place. And I think that those two pieces of his advice, right? And this is what I've been telling a lot of folks to think about, is like, you know, advice is so funny, especially unwarranted advice. I didn't ask him this, right? And it then becomes an opportunity for me to decide for myself whether I agree or disagree. And in that moment, I had to just disagree. Like, I disagree. I think that we are multifaceted human beings with all types of access to all types of abilities, and that we don't have to just be one thing, right? Like, I don't have to just be an activist. I don't have to just be an artist. I don't have to just be a writer. I don't have to just be a business person. I don't have to just be a, you know, like there is no box on who I get to be. And every time someone tries to put me into one, I work very hard at making the decision about who I want to be and who I get to be in this world, as opposed to like who people told me I get to be. And I'm all of those things. I'm all of those things. And I don't have to separate them. And it just, you know, come this moment in time, those things actually really work well together.
Somebody give you permission to be this way, like so confident and self-assured?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's a few things. I think that having parents that were disabled, my sisters and I have been talking about this a lot lately, and like, what does it do to you to have parents that are disabled at a very young age? And one thing that I think that it does do is it gives you access to what it means to be in service, right? You know, and so for me, being in service has meant, like, how do you bring these, whatever you have access to, how do you bring that to the table so that you can, you know, support other people? You know, my mother didn't have a cane for many years. She was so proud and refused to walk with a cane. And so we'd walk with her beside us, and we created all these strategies for how to move throughout the world with her and her blindness, leading her, and often like having to figure out how to navigate the world while also supporting her, right? There were times, you know, where I remember being 14 and having to take the car to the grocery store to go get groceries. My mother couldn't do it anymore. Somebody had to do it. We had to do it, you know? And so you get into this mode of like, how do I use what I have to be of service? And that's what we do here. Like, it's like, how do we use this space? How do we use these books? How do we use this art? How do we use all of this to be in service to our community? Especially a community that hasn't been served, right? You're talking about a community, especially when I think about women, and Black women have been in service for so long, right? Like, who is serving us? And I'm like, well, I can, right? Like, we can, right? And then we can start this practice of serving one another and see what happens, and see if that helps, and see if that heals, and see if that is an experiment, and we'll see what happens. We'll see if it works.
Yeah. Well, you're so amazing, and you're doing such amazing stuff, and it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for making time. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. When I was in Nairobi, one thing that I was taught is something called Ubuntu, which means I am because you are, and you are because I am. And so I am because you are, Tori, and you are because I am. So thank you.
And there you have it. A little more time spent here together. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll like, subscribe, rate, share, comment, and join me next month. I leave you with an excerpt of Gineon Cook's wonderful fiction, topped off with Mahalia Jackson's rendition of the spiritual Down by the Riverside.
She was as close to God as they could get. Miss, miss, they whispered down her hallway. They knew to ring the bell that only they knew existed. They'd come with their differences, but couldn't help being the same. I changed my mind. They say I will die. This baby is sick. I don't know the father. I've started to show. My father, he raped me. My grandfather, my uncle, my brother, my neighbor, my nephew, my friend, he raped me. So she'd do it. Her clear eyes made her feel invisible to them, and she couldn't see them either. As a formality, she'd run her fingers across their foreheads, over their eyebrows, down their noses, and their lips. The only thing she ever remembered were their voices. She could recall the slightest tremors from aisles away in the marketplace. There goes flat face, a bumpy face, a wrinkled face, pretending not to know me. Babies don't come from nowhere, but she didn't ask questions. If they wanted to share, she'd listen. He climbed me again and again. I've tried to get rid of it. I punched my belly. I drunk cleaning spray. I stuck a hunger up there. My mom said, come see you. My grandmother, my aunt, my sister, my neighbor said, come see you. It didn't take much to prepare. The recipe had been handed down to other people with clear eyes. Nothing to see here, her cousin would say to onlookers, half joking and half serious. She kept a mixture of mouse dung, honey, Egyptian salt, wild colocynth, and resin on her kitchen counter. She always started her ritual with salt sprinkled about the floor, frankincense burning in the corner, and a song. I'm gonna lay down my burdens down by the riverside, down by the riverside. Down by the riverside, I'm gonna lay down my burdens. Down by the riverside, I'm gonna study the war no more.
Gonna lay down my sword and shield. Down by the riverside. Down by the riverside. Down by the riverside. I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield. Down by the riverside, study a war no more. Well, I ain't gonna study one no more. Oh, study one no more. I'm gonna study, well, one more. Hallelujah, I ain't gonna study one no more. Oh, study one no more. I ain't gonna study, well, one no more. Yeah. My friend. gonna put up my starry crown down by the riverside. Bloody, well, war, no more. Down by the riverside, gonna put on my long white robe.